But Hurricane Sandy was one such event. I think there's very little chance that Hurricane Sandy was entirely a natural event. The reality is that weather control does exist, and I believe that the U.S. Navy and the government have the power to, or the U.S. military have the power to steer and make such a storm worse. It's important to understand that as a financial matter, the markets were down for four straight days. Of course, they're usually closed on the weekend. And so they were down Monday and Tuesday. The last time the stock exchange was closed for two consecutive trading days was in the blizzard of 1988. This one didn't just close the stock exchanges, it closed the U.S. bond market, including the Treasury market, including stopping clearance and trading of U.S. dollar-denominated government securities in Tokyo, London, and around the world. So that makes Hurricane Sandy quite a major financial event. Why is it important? Emergency status that happens when you have this kind of hurricane can give the Treasury and government agencies the power to spend and buy in mortgage securities or assets. In essence, it opens the purse strings on a highly non-accountable basis, and a basis where the bill can just be put to the Congress. It doesn't really have to go through the normal appropriation and transparency process. So that's one thing. You're looking, in any emergency status, you're looking at an opening of the Treasury in a non-accountable way, or the potential thereof. The second thing is that closing the stock exchanges and the bond markets, including having four straight days with nobody around, gives you the ability to affect a whole series of literally hundreds of billions of transactions, and that could be used to do sort of an infinite number of things, but including covering naked shorts in the stock market, clearing maturing bonds, including fraudulent positions, which I suspect the Treasury market has more than its fair share of, and as well add resources to the Exchange Stabilization Fund. If you don't know what the Exchange Stabilization Fund is, you might want to educate yourself. It's a fund run for the Treasury, for the Secretary of the Treasury, by the New York Fed, but really by the New York Fed member banks as agent, and it's the mother of all slush funds with wide latitude to intervene in the markets. I've often believed when people talk about the big short positions, for example, on J.P. Morgan Chase, on silver, the big derivative positions that the Exchange Stabilization Fund is in fact backstopping on that, and J.P. Morgan Chase is acting as agent for the Exchange Stabilization Fund. It's also often referred to as the ESF. You'll see in my writings me talking about the ESF. So my guess is that this would give you the ability to implement or shore up or do a lot of things in the Exchange Stabilization Fund. Finally, it gives you the power to move physical gold or things that look like it both in and out of the vaults at the New York Fed and the COMEX. Don't underestimate the importance of Lower Manhattan as part of the depository entities. Now, there's no way to know what has really happened here, but my hunch is that whatever happened, it's going to be something that was very effective at shoring up the integrity of the Treasury and the New York Fed balance sheet. If I had to just guess, and again, this is an early hunch, the only way to tell about these things is hopefully you get bits and pieces over time that will inform the patterns. But my hunch is funds were moved out of the government and they were moved into the clearing systems. If anything, they could cover probably the most important, my guess is gold. If anything, my question is, was gold moved back in? There's hints and rumors of all sorts of different people, sovereign nations, who have their gold down in Lower Manhattan at the New York Fed wanting audits. So was gold moved in? Certainly the Exchange Stabilization, my bet is, would have been involved. This was an operation that would have had to have been approved at the highest level with a strong international consensus. It's interesting that it happened in October, which is the period of the greatest financial fighting and stress typically. That's a long-standing pattern. The Bohemian Grove was in late July. That would have given 2.5 months for the Navy to develop the plans and finalize and do this. So perfect timing. Figure that significant criminal liabilities were cleared, but not all of them. There's still plenty of basis for fighting going on. And I would say score a big success for the military-industrial complex and the slow burn works stronger than ever. And finally, never underestimate the power of the local share. It looks to me like a big chunk of change has gone to the governors to play along. And if there's problems with the economy, everybody can say, oh, well, it was the hurricane. The bottom line, whatever it was urgent. It was important. It needed to be invisible. And but what we've probably seen is a clear demonstration of the power of the system to protect itself and to protect the balance sheet integrity of the U.S. Treasury and the New York Fed. One other thing to consider is that the Army is tired. We've seen a spreading of the U.S. military and U.S. bases, military bases all around the world. But as part of the fiscal cliff, if we're going to bring the Army back, or just, you know, a percentage of the Army back, it may be that we may need to bring more gold back to the USA, including possibly some that they took out on 9/11. So this was very big. Again, this is pure conjecture. It's impossible to tell what happened. Let's see what gets revealed. But one of the reasons I believe in the slow burn is I have I do not underestimate the power of the system to protect itself and do whatever it has to do to make sure that that slow burn keeps going. And the dollar is defended as the world reserve currency. After Hurricane Sandy, the most significant stories really come down to stories about leaders being killed. We talked several weeks ago about the Libyan ambassador, U.S. ambassador to Libya being killed. Now we have stories of a CNBC executive had two children killed in what was likely, I would say was likely a professionally orchestrated hit. We have a British ExxonMobil executive gunned down in Brussels, his wife beaten. And then we have a Middle Eastern financial manager killed in the Alps. And you're literally watching more and more stories of very prominent people whose lives are taking on the risks of the South Central Los Angeles drug dealer. It reminds me of one of my favorite essays by Michael Venturi. He says, you know, we all live in the South Bronx now. To give you a sense of the stress, Vladimir Putin canceled a conference as a result of a backache. So it just goes to show you it's not necessarily so wonderful to be a leader right now. This information was breaking out everywhere. I can't tell you how much time I spent this week deleting disinformation coming into me. When you have different events like this, suddenly the alternative press pours on the disinformation and often tries to attach it to real events in a way that we'll get a story going that's complete hogwash. But I've seen an extraordinary amount of hogwash, and that was part of the distractions, because if you looked at the news this week, it was all sports. I'm in San Francisco. The Giants winning the World Series is clearly important here. And it was all sports and Hurricane Sandy. And just as finally the World Series and Hurricane Sandy started to slow down, what did we see next? We see the former Penn State president charged with several counts in the child rape scandal at the university, including perjury, conspiracy, and endangering the welfare of children. And I can assure you that with it, it's literally every university administrator in the country is now completely terrorized, given the nature of pedophilia practices and just the risk of any kind of child abuse in any university as well. If you're a university administrator, you have a lot to be paranoid about. And when you add it all up, the message to leadership is that you and your loved ones are expendable, and so this is a dangerous world. And I think we're really seeing fear spread throughout the bureaucracies. The fiscal cliff continues to be something that's going to hit us really hard after the election. And the dead giveaway that the infrastructure is being put in place to affect tax increases and austerity measures in the United States can be seen from the drone stories. If you check out the blog, there's one after another stories of drones, even now a story of the U.S. Navy building drones for the sea. The ultimate worst was Homeland Security graduates its first corps of Homeland Youth, FEMA Corps. So we're now going to have drones in the sky and sort of are the best and the brightest of young people running around the country as an army of snitches. It's very sort of disturbing, but those are signs that they're looking to put in tax increases. Let me just run through some of the other stories that are up on the blog that I think are very telling of some of the things going on. Disney buys Lucasfilm, George Lucas finally selling out for many billions. CalPERS sues Compton for pension and health contributions. We have a system of local municipalities and state government that have committed to major pension benefits and retirement benefits. And as the economy continues to slow down in lots of different sectors, we're seeing real tension between the pension funds and, are holding lots of mortgage bubble paper and the different municipalities who now have to make good on retirement contributions that they can't afford. So watch for more sort of breaking out of squabbling. And that's a real hint of things to come. In response to the question on hyperinflation, I have a new definition of hyperinflation. A Brazilian student has sold her virginity to a Japanese man for $780,000 online. If you don't believe it, check out the story. But that is truly a sign of some kind of inflation. Science and technology continues to dazzle. There is a great story on the blog about crowdsourcing a cure for brain cancer. A technologist who wasn't pleased with the attention he was getting from his doctor, so he got all his medical records, put him up on the internet, invited lots of people to come help him, which they did. Another cancer patient who grew a new ear from their own tissue. Also, I wanted to bring up, and you saw it on the blog several weeks ago, but lots of discussion in the investment community about a new material called graphene that's literally 200 times stronger than steel. It's made from graphite, from carbon, and materials can be made from it that can literally make anything from clothes to cars to cell phones. And imagine a car that's only a couple hundred pounds, and imagine it can go 200 miles per hour because it's so light. Anyway, it's an example of the tremendous potential for material science and what can be produced and sort of what that can do for the economy. A lot of creative destruction, but a lot of enormous opportunities. So check it out, graphene. To give you a sense of the dazzling speed at which technology is moving, I put up an announcement from Stanford Law School. They're having a seminar to describe how they got Nevada to pass the law allowing driverless cars. We now have 3 states that have passed laws saying cars that are self-driving can be on the highways. Google is the one who's been pushing it, both in California and Nevada. They're going to be presenting. And it's a perfect example that when the powers that be decide, some pretty radical changes in laws are going to occur before people really understand them or have built a consensus, you know, that it can happen. And to show you the danger of being a scientist these days, an Italian court sentenced 6 scientists and a government official to 6 years in prison on manslaughter charges for failing to predict a 2009 earthquake. So wrong place, wrong time.